What I think is one of the most fascinating aspects of a band's journey is the evolution from their very first album to their most recent album. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Pretty in Punk, the punk rock podcast. I'm your host, Fiona, your girly girl guide to the world of punk, rock, and everything in between. And today we are taking a deep dive into something that I personally think is one of the most fascinating parts of any band's career, the evolution from their very first album to their very last or their most recent release. Punk music has always been about energy, rebellion, and very raw expression. But what happens when a band sticks around for years and years, even decades? Do they refine their sound or do they completely lose the edge that made them so special in the first place? In this episode, I want to look at three bands, three of my personal favorites, and three bands that really shaped my music taste and got me into punk music to begin with. We are going to be talking about Green Day, Bad Religion, and Descendants, and we're going to be comparing their first albums to their most recent albums. From their humble beginnings with scrappy DIY recordings to now some arena-filling anthems, we're going to be breaking down how their music, lyrics, and overall attitude have either changed or stayed the same throughout the years. We'll talk about vocal progression, production shifts, lyrical themes, and whether or not they have stayed true to their roots. Let's start off with none other than Green Day. Green Day's debut, 1039 Smooths Out Slappy Hours, is a compilation of some of their earliest releases, and the name combines a bunch of different EPs that were released, and basically it's a combination of some of their earliest works, 1000 Hours, Slappy, and 39 Smooth. So that is where the name stems from for this 1991 compilation release. So from this debut compilation all the way to their latest album, Saviors, in 2024, it shows just how much the band has evolved over three decades. Now, I know I'm going to get some people in the comments who are going to be telling me that Green Day isn't punk, and this is not the episode for that. This is not a Green Day deep dive. I just want to compare these two albums, and I also totally understand why people say that. So, you know, that can be a conversation for another day. However you feel about them, Green Day have such a fascinating and incredible progression in their career. I mean, they've gone from the DIY Berkeley punk scene all the way to selling out stadiums to having a Broadway musical. I mean, what an interesting, incredible career. So no matter what you think about them, their evolution really is so interesting. So let's break it down all the way from 1039 Smoothed Out Slappy Hours to Saviors. Starting off with the sound and style differences between these two. On this first album, it's raw, it's fast, and it's very youthful. It definitely has that strong influence from the Lookout Records scene, the Berkeley punk scene. It has that very energetic garage band almost feel with those simple chord structures. The production is not clean by any means, but it's almost charming in a way. And on this album, you can hear a lot of Billy Joe Armstrong's earliest songwriting about like unrequited love, boredom, and suburban angst. Then moving all the way into 2024 with Saviors, it's a more polished, diverse, and mature rock album that still does remain rebellious even after all of these years. It blends the classic Green Day punk inspired elements with elements of power pop and arena rock, and even some essence of the American Idiot era. Now, I touched a tiny bit on some of the lyrics from their first album, so let's compare the lyrics and the themes from 39 Smooth. That's what I'm going to call it for short, because I don't want to say the full name of the album every time, all the way to Saviors, which was just released last year. At the time of recording their first album, they were young. I mean, Billy Joe was probably what, like 18, 19? I don't think he was in his 20s yet. I want to say he was probably about like 19 years old. So a lot of the lyrics on this are very youthful. It focuses a lot on personal struggles that you face at this age, such as young love or unrequited love, as well as just general teenage frustration. Songs like Going to Passalacqua or At the Library, for example, they have this very youthful, yearning, longing, kind of naive quality to them. And their lyrics at this time, they were a young band just starting out, and that is 100% what these lyrics reflect. I mean, they weren't polished by any means, but at that time, that is what they were feeling, and those were the kinds of themes that they were pouring their hearts into. Flash forward all the way to 2024 with Saviors. It is very different than the feelings of Unrequited Love, where a lot of the themes tackle political discontent and societal issues. There are also the topics of aging and personal reflection as well. Songs like The American Dream is Killing Me and Look Ma, No Brains, they show that Green Day still does have that rebellious edge that they first started out with all the way back during the Lookout Records days, but they definitely have a more refined, experienced perspective. Now, in my opinion, even though I did really enjoy this album, and comparing this album to a lot of their more recent releases, it is one of my favorites, but I wouldn't say that it is some of their best lyrical work or their more experimental lyrical work, but just comparing this to 39 Smooth, you can really see and hear the evolution from the early 90s all the way to 2024. Let's dive into the overall production and performance. So with 39 Smooth, it's raw, it's DIY, and this was very typical of the early punk records of this time. The drums are very straightforward, and this album was actually before Trey Cool even came into the mix. The bass lines are definitely melodic yet simple, and same as the guitar, and Billy Joe's vocals are very youthful and unrefined at this point. I wouldn't say that there was a whole lot of experimentation going on at this point. It is still very young, and you can tell that they were in their early days at this point of this album. Taking it all the way to Saviors, we have incredibly high production quality in comparison to this. There's layered instrumentation, tight arrangements, a lot of vocal harmonies, which is something that I think Green Day does so well, and even Billy Joe's vocals on this, I think it's some of his best work in recent years, and I think his voice sounds very strong. So going from listening to a young 19-year-old kid to now, it's really interesting to hear his vocal progression. The production quality just sounds massive compared to the DIY garage punky kind of sound of their earliest work and the roughness of their earliest work. However, as a band that did start off in the punk scene, I really would not consider it a full-on punk album. Yes, there is some punk influence in there. I would definitely consider it just alternative rock or modern rock. And this is coming from someone who does love Green Day. I just wouldn't consider Saviors a true punk album. Onto the legacy and the impact that these albums have, starting with 39 Smooth, of course, I would say that this is more of a cult favorite among the old school Green Day fans. I personally love this album. It has a very special place in my heart. While it's not nearly as widely recognized as their major label releases, it does still have a lot of meaning to a lot of old school fans like myself. I mean, and by old school, I mean that I like their old school music. I was born in 2000. So while it is a cult favorite, it's not nearly as widely recognized as a lot of their bigger major label releases like American Idiot or Dookie or even Saviors now. I mean, one of my favorite Green Day songs ever, Paper Lanterns, is on this album, and there are a lot of other ones that I love on this as well. 409 in Your Coffee Maker, At the Library, I Want to Be Alone. I love a lot of the songs on this, and I think what I like the most about it is that it represents the very, very humble beginnings of a band that is now so huge and would go on to really change not only the punk world, but the rock world as well. Moving all the way to Saviors, their latest release, this is a reflection of Green Day's longevity and their ability to stay relevant. Whether you agree that they are relevant or not, I personally think they are. They are still selling out tours and booking major music festivals, and they still have newer fans that are in middle school or high school. It proves that they can still write these energetic, relevant rock songs decades later into their career. It definitely bridges their old sound, but with a much more modern edge. Overall, Green Day's growth from 1039 Smoothed Out Slappy Hours to Saviors, it just showcases their ability to evolve and grow. Their debut was scrappy and youthful and totally unpolished, and Saviors is definitely a reflection of seasoned musicians. They've lived through the highs and low of their career, but they still have something to say. Fans of both of these albums will kind of find that despite all of their changes, Green Day still thrives on energy, rebellion, and making a statement, as well as really catchy melodies and catchy hooks. While I did enjoy Saviors, I will be one of those people and be completely honest and say that yes, I do like their first album way more than their recent. Next up, let's talk about Bad Religion, another band that I adore. We're going to be talking about Bad Religion's debut full length, How Could Hell Be Any Worse, and their most recent album, Age of Unreason. These two albums highlight the evolution of a highly influential band. So let's break it down. Starting off with the sound and style of these two albums, starting off with How Could Hell Be Any Worse, it's raw, it's aggressive, and it's unpolished. And personally, that is what I love about punk of this era. I love that it is not this like super polished sound. It has fast tempos, distorted guitars, and this youthful sense of urgency and angst. Bad Religion is very well known for super intellectual lyrics, and this album has some of that, but more straightforward and not as metaphorical and not as polished, I guess you could say, in that regard. While raw and energetic, no, the production is not polished, but personally, again, I don't mind that, and that is what I do really like about punk of this era. Then moving on to Age of Unreason, it's a polished, very melodic punk rock album that it retains the band's very signature sound, but definitely with more refined and more modern sounding production. It blends their classic fast-paced style and catchy hooks, but just with a little bit of a more modern sound. On to the lyrics and the themes on these two albums. So How Could Hell Be Any Worse? It focuses on themes of social decay, existential dread, you know, the usual, and of course, youthful rebellion. But tracks like We're Only Gonna Die, F Armageddon, This Is Hell, and Oligarchy, they already showcase Greg Graffin and Brett Gerwitz, their knack for these very philosophical and politically charged lyrics that really are such a staple with Bad Religion. While it definitely hints at their future lyrical brilliance, which personally, I think that Bad Religion, their lyrics are just top notch. Some of the lyrics, of course, because it is their earliest work, they feel underdeveloped compared to their later releases. It doesn't have the more refined philosophical depths of albums like No Control or even The Process of Belief. However, this completely makes sense as it is their earliest work, and I still think that these guys have such a knack for songwriting. Age of Unreason is a more politically urgent album, as many Bad Religion albums are, but it tackles themes like authoritarianism, misinformation, and societal regression. Songs like My Sanity or Chaos from Within, they reflect on the state of the world, and they show that Bad Religion has this continued relevance in the modern punk scene and their continued interest, of course, in making very political statements with their music. Now, I could see the argument that while the lyrics are so sharp and on point and so well written, they can be a bit repetitive feeling, as these are themes that Bad Religion has tackled on so many other tracks already. So some tracks, while yes, they are very politically charged and meaningful, they could just come across as just another Bad Religion song rather than breaking new ground with something new that we haven't heard from them before. Onto the production and the performance of these two albums, starting with, of course, How Could Hell Be Any Worse. It's very DIY with a small budget, and it has a gritty, very imperfect sound. However, the very raw feel adds to the album's charm. I mean, the buzzing guitars, the slightly off-key vocals, in all honesty. However, in my opinion, I think that Greg Graffin's vocals are some of the grittiest and angriest that I've heard in their whole discography. Onto Age of Unreason, it's very high quality, very, very clean, and very modern. They have layered harmonies, very tight instrumentation, and a much fuller sound. The band's harmonies, which are such a Bad Religion staple and something that I think that they do so well, they're more refined and the guitars feel just that much punchier. However, Age of Unreason still maintains that punk speed. Now, as for Greg Graffin's vocals on this album, they're a lot cleaner here, not as gritty and in your face, a little bit more subdued, and If I am being completely honest, it's not my favorite vocal work of his. And while polished, it almost feels as if it's playing things a little safe. Some people may even argue that this album's production is almost too clean for a punk album, and I honestly kind of agree with that. I love Bad Religion. Their earliest work is some of my favorite, Suffer and No Control especially, and on Suffer, I love too how gritty and DIY that one is, and it's so interesting comparing their earliest work to this now very modern, clean sound with honestly even some pop punk elements. As for the legacy and the impact of these albums, how could hell be any worse? It's an early West Coast punk album, and it lays the foundation for the more melodic sound of punk with those harmonies and those layered sounding vocals. And of course, it marks the beginning of Bad Religion's long, very influential career. I mean, the band is still going today. I actually just bought tickets to see them on tour in the summer. And as for Age of Unreason, it definitely is an example of how a punk band can still remain relevant and socially and politically aware. While I wouldn't say it's groundbreaking by any means, it reinforces their role as such a staple in punk music. Overall, their journey from How Could Hell Be Any Worse to Age of Unreason, it shows the evolution from raw DIY punk to the very intellectual, politically charged lyrics and melodic sound that they are known for today. I would say that their debut definitely captures the raw, very unfiltered sound of the band, and it's very youthful as well, but Age of Unreason definitely shows the work of very seasoned musicians who still have something to say. As for our last album, we were getting into another one of my favorite bands. Let's talk about Descendants. Let's compare Milo Goes to College to Hypercaffeum Spazinate. Hope I'm saying that right. Also, I do want to note the reason that I chose to speak on Hypercaffeum instead of Ninth and Walnut is because the latter consists of some re-recorded early material and songs that were written in the 1970s, many of which were before Milo even joined the band. So I just thought it would be better to talk about that as these are the most recently written songs on a full-length album, I guess you could say. That is my reasoning for that. Let's just get into it. So starting off, the sound and the style of these two albums, Milo Goes to College, it's a very raw, fast, energetic blend of punk and melody. And I mean, this album is known for defining the pop punk genre before it even really existed. It's aggressive but catchy, and definitely, like the other two albums, has this youthful DIY sound. Moving on to Hypercaffeum, it's a more polished but still very high energy album. It shows the band's ability to maintain speed and melody, but also incorporating much tighter production. I do feel that it definitely still feels distinctly Descendants, but some longtime fans could definitely argue that it lacks the same youthful energy, of course, that made early Descendants so different and so stand out. I would say that the album has a few standout tracks and definitely a few of my favorite releases from them, but some other tracks do feel kind of filler. On to the lyrics and the themes. Milo Goes to College, it's their earliest work, so of course. So it focuses on themes of alienation, heartbreak, frustration. A lot of the songs on this album mix humor and melancholy, which kind of become a staple in pop punk later in years to come. This album is personal and youthful, and it reflects a lot of struggles of teenage and early adulthood years. Now, as for Hypercaffeum Spazinate, it expands on these similar themes, but with a perspective that is kind of shaped by the age of the band members now. While there are still songs about love and relationships and those kinds of frustration, tracks like No Fat Burger, for example, or Feel This, they deal with aging, health, mortality, and they show a definitely more mature side of Descendants. Now, some people, I could definitely see them thinking that these themes aren't as universally recognizable or relatable as their older records. However, I think this is a reflection of their growth, and these are some interesting themes that you don't hear a lot, and it shows their more vulnerable side. I mean, I think Descendants have always been comfortable being vulnerable, but this is vulnerability in a new light. And honestly, I think that's kind of refreshing. As for the production and the performance, Milo Goes to College, of course, it's rougher around the edges and it's not polished, and it has that raw garage band feel. The songs are short, They're punchy, DIY punk, and it's what I love. I love anything that is short and fast. Those are my favorite kinds of punk songs. Hypercaffeum, it's cleaner, it's crisper, fuller, modern. The band still plays with the same in-your-face intensity that they always did. Everything is just that much sharper. Now, while the band sounds like as tight of a unit as ever, the cleaner sound may lack that raw feel that a lot of early Descendants fans are looking for. However, while the production is so clean, I personally do think that it definitely stays true to the Descendants sound that we all know and love. As for the legacy and the impact of these albums, starting off with, of course, Milo Goes to College, this is one of the most influential punk slash pop punk albums of all time. I'm gonna be so real. It laid the foundation for pop punk and a very melodic side of punk, and a lot of pop punk bands that would come out of the woodwork years later, they honestly owe a lot to this record for laying that foundation. And of course, Hypercaffeum Spazzinate, it's a testament to the band's longevity. I mean, I only just saw this band a year ago, almost a year ago. And it proves that they can still write these fast, catchy, relatable punk songs, even though the songs about age or health issues, they may not be as widely relatable to all fans. They definitely can still be relatable to some, and they're still raw, real, and vulnerable. While it didn't completely redefine the genre like their debut, it reaffirmed their status as icons in the scene. It has its flaws. It's not one of my favorite releases from them, but it is unmistakably Descendants. My final thoughts on these two is that Milo Goes to College, it's the sound of their youthful frustration and raw energy, while Hypercaffeum, it's the work of very seasoned musicians. And they still deliver that same passion and energy decades later. Despite the years between them, I really do think that both of these albums are unmistakably Descendants. They're full of humor, heartache, and these high-speed, super catchy hooks. And there you have it, three legendary punk bands, three journeys spanning decades, and the comparisons from where they started to where they are now. Green Day, Bad Religion, and Descendants, all three of these bands have had such different and fascinating pasts. None of them are truly alike. One thing is clear after looking into these albums is that evolution, it's inevitable. Some bands completely redefine their sounds, others refine it, some double down on their roots, and some even push boundaries in ways that their fan base could have never expected. Whether you prefer the more raw DIY feel of these bands' earliest work or the more polished arena-ready sound of their latest releases, one thing is for sure, I believe that all three of these bands have such a lasting impact on the punk and the rock world. And honestly, I think that's what makes following a band for years so interesting, because you get to see their highs, their lows, their risks, and everything that has truly formed their career. I want to hear from you. What do you think? Have these bands stayed true to their roots, or do you think they've strayed too far? And which of these releases is your favorite? But I want to hear from you. Let me know what you think. And to end out the episode, I have a Song of the Week playlist that I add a new song or songs to every week based on the episode. And I decided to choose just one song off of this because recently I have been choosing more than one and it gets to be a lot to talk about. So I'm choosing one. I am choosing a song that I think deserves some more love, and that is F Armageddon, This Is Hell by Bad Religion. Not gonna say the full word because YouTube is funny sometimes. And this is, of course, off of How Could Hell Be Any Worse. This is one of my favorites. I love this song and I think it deserves more love. So that will be on my Song of the Week playlist. You can find the link below in the show notes or the YouTube description. It's on Spotify. I am a Spotify user. So if you're not a Spotify user, maybe get it so you can follow along. All of that being said, if you want to follow me, you can follow me on Instagram and TikTok at Pretty and Punk Pod, and I post short clips and updates and all that. So definitely follow me on there. Stay tuned. All of my links will be below. You can find me on all streaming platforms as well as YouTube for video podcasts. I post new episodes every Friday. So thank you so much for watching, and I will see you in the next episode.